Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We get out of the studio and onto the road to find the kind of radio you don't hear so much anymore. Stories off the beaten path and usually away from the top headlines. So send us a note if you have an idea or just want to say hi. Our email address is indianaweekend@gmail.com. When the weather breaks and the glaciers finally recede back to Michigan, here's an idea for a little Indiana getaway. Think about a trip to historic New Harmony, about half an hour northwest of Evansville. Yes, I know that's at the other end of the state, but New Harmony's a beautiful little town on the Wabash with a big history, home to two utopian social communities of the 1800s. It's quaint, picturesque, and peaceful. And if things get too peaceful, you always have the Evansville Casino just down the road. But let's stick with New Harmony. The town is celebrating its 200th anniversary this year. The Harmonists who founded the town as a center of communal living are long gone, but we did find a couple of folks to help explain this intriguing corner of the state's history.
My name is Jan Colley, and I am a lifelong resident of New Harmony and am the administrative assistant for the Bicentennial Commission. We've already had a couple of events. We had an event New Year's Eve, had a New Year's Eve party. And then this past Friday night, we had our Harmony Fest, which we have every year. It commemorates the date that new members were admitted into the Harmony Society, the group that founded New Harmony. Our capstone week is going to be in August because the town was laid out on August the 8th. And it's going to have everything from parades to picnics to music. All kinds of different celebrations are going on that week. I have a really interesting history. We had two experiments in communal living here, the Harmony Society, which built the town. They were a religious group. And then we had the Owen McClure community, which was an education and cultural group. And today I think you can still feel the influences of both of those groups in New Harmony.
Now, I guess the Harmonists moved back to Pennsylvania, but Robert Owen's descendants, some of those folks are still around?
We have several descendants, not only of the Owen family, but also of some of the other scientists and educators that came with that group. The biggest blessing that we had was Jane Blasser Owen, who married a descendant of Robert Owen, and she was a great friend of New Harmony and really kind of helped people become aware of New Harmony and its history.
New Harmony became sort of a center of scientists and others. It did.
Many of the scientists and educators that came here with the Owen group stayed even after the community was dissolved as a community. It was kind of a scientific and cultural oasis here. We actually call that the afterglow period. And a story that I like to tell when I take people out on tour is that when the Indiana State Museum opened its new building a few years ago, I was up there and they had a list of the top 10 scientists in Indiana in 1850. Which would have been about 20 years after the community dissolved. Of those 10, five of them lived in New Harmony. And I think that can really give you an idea of the kinds of people that we had here in what we refer to as the afterglow period.
Tell us a story about that time. What was that like?
There were a lot of schools going on here, and that started with the Owen McClure community. They had schools for children as young as three, reminiscent of the daycares and preschools that we have today. They also had a school that they called the School of Industry, which you could compare to the technical schools that we have today. And even after the community dissolved, education was very important, and there were lots of private schools here in New Harmony. There was also all kinds of scientific experiments going on. Robert Owen's son, David Dale Owen, was actually the first U.S. geologist. And he also did a lot of geology work up in Illinois, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and through his work actually opened that area up to settlement. So there were still exciting things going on here, even though they were no longer a communal community.
One of Robert Owen's descendants became the first president of Purdue University, I think, right?
Right. Richard, another son of Robert Owen, Richard, who is my favorite of the Owen boys, was the founding president of Purdue University. a longtime professor at Indiana University, but my favorite story about Richard is that during the Civil War, there was a prisoner of war camp near Indianapolis called Camp Morton, and he was the commander there for a couple of years, and he treated the prisoners so well that after the war was over, they commissioned to have two busts of Richard Owen created, and one sits in the State House today, and the other one is on the campus of Indiana University.
What were the Owens like?
Very social-minded. Robert Owen left home in Wales at the age of 10 to become an apprentice in London. And when he got to London, he saw that abject poverty among the very poor. And it really, really touched him. And so when he became the owner of a textile mill in Scotland, he began to think about how he could help his workers. And he created schools for the children and even schools for the adults. So he was very conscious-minded, and it was through his success with his schools at his textile mills that he actually decided he wanted to create, in his words, a new moral world. And his sons really followed in his footsteps. Another son, Robert Dale Owen, was very socially active. He worked for women's rights. He was involved in the anti-slavery movement. When he was in, he was a congressman, an Indiana congressman, and when he was in the State House, he was involved in two very important pieces of legislation, the bill that allowed women to own property and the bill that created a public school system in the state of Indiana. In later years, he was a congressman in Washington, and while there, he and his brother David Dale Owen were instrumental in creating the Smithsonian Institution as we know it today, and actually picked out the architect for the Smithsonian Castle.
If the Owens came back to New Harmony today, would they see echoes of the community that they had such an influence on?
I think they would. There's a lot of art galleries in town, and I think they would be pleased with that. There's two or three different musical groups in town that perform not only locally, but sometimes in the tri-state area. I think they would be pleased with that. We did recently lose our school 2 years ago this coming May. I'm not sure they'd be too pleased with that. But I think they'd be happy with what's happened.
Jan Colley, lifelong resident of New Harmony and the administrative assistant for the Bicentennial Commission. The town is celebrating its 200th anniversary this year. One of the big events is their Capstone Week in August, commemorating when New Harmony was laid out on August 8, 1814. They'll have parades, music, a town picnic. All the details are at newharmony-in.gov.
Indiana Weekend, real radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line to let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Now here's John Strauss.
Driving around the state today, it's hard to conceive of a time when getting to New Harmony likely meant a trip by boat down the Ohio River, past Evansville, and then up the Wabash a little ways. Some of what we know about the community's first settlers comes from the work of researchers from the University of Southern Indiana.
My name is Michael Strzeski, and I'm Associate Professor of Anthropology at University of Southern Indiana. My New Harmony work has to do with looking at the Harmonists, the founders of the town, and some of the industries and some of the buildings that were associated with that occupation. The Harmonists were a group, basically a religious group, originally from Germany, and the founder of the group was a fellow by the name of George Rapp. And George Rapp had some ideas about how religion should be practiced that conflicted with those of the Lutheran Church back in their homeland. He was against taking vows. He wanted people to live in a more system that was more like what he thought the early Christians were like. So he thought that the Lutheran Church kind of strayed away from what true Christianity was, and he wanted to go back to that original version of Christianity. Well, at that time, you know, if you came into conflict with the church authorities, you were sort of carefully guided back into the proper way of believing, and he didn't want to be guided back, and so he eventually decided to move himself and his followers to the United States, where they came in 1805. So they stayed in Pennsylvania for about 10 years, and then, like as I mentioned, they wanted to find some more space to move around a little bit and expand their operations and expand their farming operations, so they came to Indiana. But some of the basic tenets of the group were they believed in communal living, in the sense that when you join the Harmonists, you gave all your property to the group, and it was sort of pooled together, and you didn't own your own house or you didn't own your belongings or anything like that. Those were given to you as being part of the group. They were very religious. They were followers of George Rapp, and they, believed him to be a prophet. So, kind of his word was the law within the group. And, some outside people saw it as they were sort of slavishly following George Rapp, but I'm sure within the group they didn't think of it like that. They thought that this man was really, had a real message, and they followed him for it. But, the Harmonists would basically take care of you from birth to death. And some people left. It found it wasn't for them. But many people stayed throughout their entire lives.
So what happened to the Harmonists? The Harmonists eventually left New Harmony.
Yes. What happened was, and we're not exactly sure why they left, but we have some pretty good ideas, is that around 1824, they had spent about 10 years here in Indiana, and they decided to leave. And we think it has something to do with the fact that they were so far removed from the eastern markets. They felt they were too isolated. Other issues, too, with the their neighbors. They had some issues with neighbors. Their relations weren't always that friendly because they were a sort of isolated group with some strange religious beliefs, or so their neighbors, thought that. They were a bit suspicious of them, and they were very insular. Many of them didn't speak English. And, part of the reason why they moved back to Pennsylvania was that they could be closer to German speakers there. Just a bunch of different reasons, but it seems that they weren't entirely happy here in Indiana and decided to go back to Pennsylvania. And they established a third town in 1825 called Economy. And they, after that point, their numbers continued to dwindle. One of the reasons, main reasons being, first of all, they didn't try to acquire new members, and second of all, they were celibate. That was another one of their beliefs. So that kind of combined together results in your membership getting older and older and fewer over the years.
Aside from the celibacy practice, you mentioned that some of their neighbors thought that some of the things that they did were different in some way. Any other examples?
Yeah, well, celibacy was kind of one of the main ones. They lived communally in the sense that they had many people lived in dormitories that in New Harmony. The Harmonists built four communal dormitories for men and women to live in. And if you came to New Harmony with a family, they wouldn't break up your family. So they did have individual family households, but they would mix people in. You'd have your family and you'd have a couple other people living with your family. So, that was another thing that was kind of odd as far as the, standard American way of life was back then. And the other issue, too, is just the insularity of the society. They didn't interact with their neighbors. Most of them didn't speak English. Another issue, too, is that they had so much sway in the county because they had a large population of people that some of the non-Harmonist settlers of Posey County were worried that the Harmonists would have too much influence over county affairs.
Is this what today we'd call a cult?
I often bring that up when I'm talking to people, is that, if there were a group like this living in Posey County of the Gateway, today we might call them a cult, and it's because, they have this charismatic leader who kind of makes all the decisions about the group, and, the people are kind of devoted to this guy and listen to his every word. And I think in some sense you might call it a cult, it wasn't, I've read a number of accounts of people who left the society, and they were basically cut off. They weren't
shunned,
in that sense they were. They were deemed enemies of the group, and they weren't given any money because when they joined, they signed a contract deeding over all of their possessions to the Harmony Society. And when they left, in many cases, they left basically penniless. They maybe were given a little bit token sum of money, and then were left penniless. So many people left, and then they came back, but some eventually left and there were lawsuits against the harmonists to get their possessions back, et cetera. But, yeah, I don't know. In some sense, you might call it a cult. Yeah. Sounds like it's got a negative connotation to it. And
does,
we like to think of the harmonists in more of a,
benign.
Sort of romantic. Yeah, sort of benign or romantic light to it. But, yeah, if you look at the definition of a cult, they match up fairly well, I think.
Dr. Michael Strzeski is an assistant professor of anthropology at the University of Southern Indiana who has studied the life of the harmonists in New Harmony. The town is marking its bicentennial this year, giving us an excuse to talk about one of Indiana's most fascinating places.
There are stars in the southern sky.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
This is the bicentennial year for New Harmony, Indiana, the historic town near Evansville that was the site of two experiments in communal living in the 1800s. We spoke with Jan Colley, a tour guide and one of the people helping organize the big lineup of bicentennial events. As she says, it's a little different here. It's a different kind of visit. It's not about the nightlife. It's kind of about just being here.
We have people from all over the world come here, and people with all different interests. We have historians that come. I mentioned the labyrinth enthusiasts that we have come. We have two really important pieces of 20th century architecture, one by Richard Meyer, one by Philip Johnson. So we get architects and architectural students from all over the country. Geology was important. We get a lot of geologists. A lot of times they'll have meetings here in New Harmony. So we have a lot of things to attract a lot of different people.
What's the Philip Johnson building?
The Roofless Church is the Philip Johnson building.
Yeah.
And then the Athenaeum Visitor Center is the Richard Meyer building.
When I come to New Harmony, I want you as a tour guide. How do we find you, Jan?
You've got my number. Just give me a call. I'd be glad to do it.
But if people are looking for you, do they go to the Athenaeum? Is that where the tours start?
Yes, we have many fine tour guides here, and they go to the Athenaeum Visitor Center, which is a big white building down by the river. We offer tours twice daily. I truly think that's the best way to learn about the history of New Harmony. It takes anywhere from 2 to 3 hours, depending on your interest. And then you plan to spend 2 or 3 days here and just enjoy the town. It's a great place to walk. We also have golf cart rental, because we have a lot of people use their golf carts to get around town, so it's a really nice, quiet vacation. I mean, we don't have any neon lights or, that sort of thing, but it's a really quiet place to visit.
Oh, so you're not going to be like the next Branson.
No, absolutely not. No. But it's a different kind of visit here, It's not the kind where you're going to go and have a busy nightlife. It's more just being. I've had a lot of people when they come here and they'll say, there's just something about New Harmony. And I think that pretty much sums it up for a lot of visitors. Sometimes they have a hard time sleeping because it's so quiet.
If you visit New Harmony, you can walk around and see some of the buildings that were built originally during the Harmonist period and that were around afterward.
There were originally 180 buildings built by the Harmony Society. We have about 40 of them left. Some of them are open to the public. Some of them are owned privately. And that's one of the things that I really like to stress to our visitors is that New Harmony is a living community. As wonderful as places like Williamsburg or Conner Prairie, for that matter, as wonderful as they are a defined space that interprets a defined period of time. New Harmony, has their own drugstore, has their own post office. We have people that have lived here all their lives. We have people that have retired here. Some of the original buildings are used as residences. Some private residents are right next to the historic site. So it really is truly a living community.
So don't just go walking into the middle of somebody's kitchen or something like that.
Exactly. That has happened, actually. But, it's better if you come down here. If you're really going to get a sense of what New Harmony is all about, it's best if you go to the Athenaeum Visitor Center and take a tour there.
One of the things that you can see is the labyrinth. What's that about?
The labyrinth is a replica of one that the Harmony Society had here, and they used it for meditation and prayer. Over the years, it kind of just disappeared, and then in 1939, the state of Indiana recreated it, although on a much smaller scale.
What is it exactly? Describe what it is that people see.
Well, a labyrinth, people sometimes confuse a labyrinth and a maze. We have labyrinths here. We actually have two of them. But it's the labyrinth that the harmonists had. It was a shrub labyrinth. There are paths that you can follow, and you'll walk around and around and around. And when you get to the center, there's this stone temple. And inside the temple are writings of Father Rapp, the leader of the Harmony Society, and excerpts of some of his sermons. Now, the second labyrinth that we have was built about 15 years ago, and it's a replica of the one in Chartres, France. So it's an in-ground labyrinth, and it, too, is used even today for meditation and prayer. And we have people come from all over the world because we have two labyrinths here.
Aside from the historical piece of it, of the town's history and preserving that, are there folks who want to preserve the religious piece?
I think to some extent. Now, maybe not to the extreme that the Harmony Society believed. You know, they thought Christ was going to return in their lifetime and they would live forever with Christ. But we do have seven churches in a town of 850 people. And then I think education is very important. We have all kinds of cultural events. We have concert series. We have summer theater. The art galleries that I mentioned have all kinds of events going on. Historic New Harmony itself is connected with the University of Southern Indiana, so we have access to a lot of the events and the faculty members over there. So we have a lot of different things going on.
Jan Colley, who's helping organize this year's bicentennial events at New Harmony, the peaceful but very historic community on the Wabash River near Evansville. The first weekend in May features the Harmony 100 Bike Ride and the Arts in Harmony Fine Arts Fair. More details at newharmony-in.gov. That's our time for today. Thanks for yours. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Marcus Jackman. Glad you could join us this time and hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com with your own favorite Indiana places. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week. Until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio, I'm John Strauss.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss of the Ball State Journalism Department. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Marcus Jackman. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from Dillman's Furniture, Muncie, serving East Central Indiana with home furnishings from Flex Steel, Bassett, and Simmons Beautyrest. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.